Welcome, everyone, to Wise Talk. This is Mariposa's monthly podcast, providing perspectives on leadership. Today, we're excited to welcome Sarah Noel Wilson. Sarah, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Sarah is an executive coach, leadership development consultant, and bestselling author of Don't Feed the Elephants, Overcoming the Art of Avoidance to Build Powerful Partnerships. And I really want to talk about the title. Like, we spend like most of our time talking about that. She's a regular contributor to HBR and hosts the podcast Conversations on Conversations. It's certified in coactive coaching, conversational intelligence, and a frequent guest lecturer at universities. Sarah works with leaders to develop more powerful partnerships and helps teams spot patterns that are keeping them from higher performance. An in-demand keynote speaker, she leads workshops and team retreats for leaders and HR professionals. Previously, Sarah worked in management and as a talent development leader for an insurance company, giving her firsthand insight into the challenges of corporate leadership. In addition to her work with co-ed organizations, Sarah is a passionate advocate for mental health. She holds several coaching certifications and has a master's in leadership development from Drake University. So again, I want to welcome you from Des Moines, Iowa.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I read your bio and, you know, we want to make sure we got everything back.
I mean, you read it all.
I read all the things. But, you know, I really just want to know more from your personal story. You know, what's influenced you to write this book? And also, why did you title it that?
I know nobody's asked me about the title, so I appreciate that as an opportunity. So a little bit about me personally and how that led into the book. I was in my studies of leadership development, was introduced to the idea of the elephant in the room. And not that I certainly wasn't familiar intimately with avoidance, I just didn't know the name for it. And as I was learning that, I realized that I had never experienced a team and I had never experienced relationships, quite frankly, where we talked about the hard stuff. And so I became really fascinated with how do you actually create that? You know, growing up in the Midwest, you know, something we talk about a lot is the whole Midwest nice, which now I just lovingly call violent politeness. And violent politeness.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's the like, I mean, there's the niceness of if you need something, we will be there, right? Like we, you know, we see you on the street. Everyone can tell I'm from the Midwest when I go to New York, like you're too smiley and you're saying hello to everyone and just like, stop apologizing. But then there's this other side of that, which is we don't talk about the hard stuff. We smooth it over. We do everything we can to maintain harmony, but that doesn't mean that, you know, I always say that we're real good at smiling, but seething. We're really good at having all the conversations with all the wrong people. And the thing that, so I just became fascinated with, can you even create this? Cause I had never experienced it. And then I realized that part of the reason I'd never experienced it is because I probably basically only knew how to avoid conflict. And, you know, as I got more curious, realized I came from generations of avoiders. And so it really became my mission to understand it. And it started first with just like, how do you have the conversations, right? And there's countless books written on that. But then I started to realize lots of people were reading those and they were still avoiding it. And so then I became really curious with the avoidance and just how do we better understand when we have our foot on the brake? And to name it and to be able to then make a conscious choice from that. But it really came from a deep, deep personal desire to want to experience having healthy relationships.
Yeah. So then you went and did some research and I assume you did some research on attachment theory.
Well, yeah, not directly, but indirectly through my own therapy. I'm very familiar with it. Yeah.
Right. So tell us a little bit about the antecedents of the book in terms of how did you come to, you've got some different types and things like that. I mean, did you go and interview people or did you?
Yeah. I mean, so some of it, you know, was just researching and reading what other people had put out there. A lot of it is just my own experience of, I was in leadership positions. I led leadership development efforts. So it was a combination of research that I knew was out there and understanding more about the brain and understanding how does that impact things and really just getting curious and experimenting with language that resonated for people. And I think that, you know, you asked about the title. Sometimes, not always, but sometimes what I found is that when using language that's a little lighter, sometimes made it easier for people to engage with the concepts that wouldn't come with a lot of shame or beating themselves up or really like a ton of discomfort. And so, you know, I lovingly say, while the book is lighthearted, we hope it's not lightweight, because when we're avoiding a conversation, it's because something matters, or often it is. And so that's how that came about. And so playing on that metaphor of the elephant in the room, you know, one of the things that I would always hear is people would say, oh, that person's the elephant in the room. And they would point at the boss. And I just became really curious about, well, what actually creates the elephant? Mm-hmm. And, you know, because if you and I have a problem and you come and talk to me, there's no elephant. So it's not that the conflict is the elephant, but it's our avoidance of it. Hence the don't feed the elephant. You know, we create the elephant when we avoid acknowledging right. or addressing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So there's so many directions, and we have a set of questions here, and I'll probably go off of this.
Yeah, no, I love it.
Not that I'm avoiding them, because I'm not, but I'm not. But, you know, so much of what we're hearing these days is about the avoidance of our care of ourselves and the avoidance of conflict as well, because we're in a milieu that is so full of conflict.
Yeah.
I mean, we very much, more than any other time in my life, I don't know about you, but in my life, I think that we're still in the pandemic. I mean, we still have to wear masks and when we go inside. I mean, Hawaii here, I mean, I'm maybe one of the few of 10 people that are still doing it.
But I was going to say, in your town, are they? Because I'm the only
still
one
doing
in
it.
Mine.
Still
yeah,
doing
me
it.
Too.
So there's a pandemic, there's climate change, there's Roe v. Wade. There's so many things that are being thrown at us.
Yeah.
And so talk with us a little bit about like the difference between Teflon-ing something, because there's so much stuff coming at us that we have to sort of say, stop, I'm not going to watch the news anymore, or something. We have to like do things that is an avoidance technique.
Yeah.
Avoidance. But at the same time, also able to deal with the hard questions. Because I think that balance is difficult.
Yeah, it was always difficult. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure you see this in your work and your world, but I mean, we collectively see resilience is at an all-time low, just because of the, again, as you pointed out, just this extended prolonged exposure to stress that we're experiencing. I mean, we're living in a time of just chronic uncertainty and complexity yes. and conflict. And
yes.
And the way that I think about this, and certainly from, you know, mental health professionals would be able to maybe better articulate of when does it become unhealthy, numbing behaviors and avoidance. But
right.
there are times when avoidance is appropriate and okay. And for me, the way that I think about it in my work is coming from a place, not a fearful avoidance, but of a, like a conscious disengagement, mm-hmm. if that makes sense, you know, cause yeah. I kind of think of avoidance, how I see it a lot in the relationships that we work with is, there's the aggressive avoidance, which is passive aggressive. I'm going to leave the room, but I'm going to throw a grenade behind me, or I'm going to stonewall you. And I'm going to do all of these things that are really, I mean, it's not avoidance, but it, you know, it's a form of it. And then that fearful of, I'm so afraid of what's going to happen. It's the stress response. And then there are just times where you go, I don't have the energy right now to do this. And the thing that's like a slight nuance of that for me is that when we are reflective and we make that choice, that mm-hmm. conscious avoidance gives us our power back in a time when I think we can feel really powerless. And because we're making a choice to say, you know what, I know that I don't have the energy right now, or I'm not going to have this conversation with this person because I'm literally dealing with taking care of a sick parent, and that's where my energy needs to go. And so I'm going to do what I need to do in order to either accept the situation or adjust it or show up differently. Or, you know, like you talk about, you know, the onslaught of news of, I want to be informed. And I also mm-hmm. know there's a cost to me if I yes. keep watching it and finding that balance of, so I can continue to show up at my best.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I like that, because there is a way to balance this.
Yeah, because so, to totally devoid sometimes is an incredible place of privilege.
That's right. You have to be in the world, and you have to understand that others are suffering more than we are, and that we need to be able to help people that are suffering more than we are. As much as big old extrovert, as much as I hate this, I still am able to have a pretty nice life, and so I am. Very conscious of those that are suffering and not having a hard time. Mm. So we do have to still be in the world. I mean, I feel like every day I wake up, okay, how am I balancing my day to day? The bad things. because there's just so many things going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is what we're hearing from our clients too. It's like, there's like somebody asked me the other day and said, you know, she's in a big job now. She goes, is this the way it's always going to be? I go, yeah. I said, I go, yeah, actually, this is going to be but your response isn't going to be the same the whole time.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so I kind of was like, sorry.
somebody said, how are you doing really these days, Sarah? And I said, you know, the story, the princess and the bee. And they're like, yeah. I said, well, some days I feel like the princess and I'm inconvenienced and I'm not sleeping well. And I said, and other days I'm the bee and I'm just done being like covered right. up with more and more mattresses. But I was like, I'm never not in that formula. It feels like right.
you're one or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about the book a little bit. So you've got different types of elements. Maybe talk a little bit about your concept of this
yeah.
idea. And then there's like different types of, you've got the avoidant, the imagifant, the blamefant, the nudgefant, the deflectfant. These are all obviously riffs on fint, elephant. Yeah. Anyway.
You very very rigorous academic yeah. technical terms.
There. Yeah, yeah. So why don't you, if you could go through some
yeah.
of that.
Yeah, again, part of the practice and in the philosophy is how do we see better what's happening so then we can choose differently and do better. And, you know, I don't remember the origin of where this came about, but I just became really interested in the different types of avoidance and how it came up. And then I was joking with somebody, we're like, wouldn't it be funny if there's different types of elephants? And, you know, and the idea behind it, again, in a loving, lighthearted way, is to for us to examine and go, when am I just out? Like avoidance is the main one, right? That's what creates it. But when am I avoiding something by staying in a place of blaming? Like, I'm just going to blame you for everything. I'm never going to reflect on the role that I've played. I'm not going to have the conversation with you. I'm not going to maybe have the necessary conversation I need to have with myself. And we call that the blamefant. The imagifant is when we imagine. You know, that one I actually think was the first one because it was, you know, somebody was like, well, I know that's what they meant. Like, I just know that that's what they meant instead of getting curious and potentially having the conversation to confirm mm-hmm. and clarify. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then the nudgefant is where it's like, and this is, you know, I feel like this is the one in my DNA from growing up is like, I might nudge it. I might be passive, you know, like indirect about it. And sometimes that can be really an effective approach. The deflective fin is when, and this can show up a couple of different ways. Sometimes, you know, you'll see groups that will deflect by deflect having the conversation they need to have. Maybe it's because somebody's being sarcastic and they're like, they're making jokes and they're kind of the smartass of the group and deflecting actually having the like the real conversation. Sometimes it's literally like, I'm just too tired to talk about it, right? And it's an avoid, right? That avoidant technique. But other times in teams in particular, we deflect by not working on the right problem or asking the like hard questions. And what's been interesting and fun is since the book came out is people will email me or send me new elephants that they've like, oh, I found a new one. And so somebody said, I discovered a rent-a-fit. And I was like, yeah, tell me more. They're like, sometimes I just need to borrow the avoidance till I can get the courage to them. But I know I'm just borrowing it for a little bit. But the newest one that's come up is somebody coined the pretend-a-fent. It's like, especially in relationships and family relationships, we're just going to pretend like that didn't happen. We're just going to keep moving forward.
Move on.
Yeah. Just smooth it over. And so the idea of it is ultimately, how can we start to see, oh, I'm caught in a cycle of blaming, or I'm imagining something that I don't know if it's true or not. So how do I test maybe it's true. Mm-hmm. It might be true. It absolutely can. But like, let's test our assumption. And so it's a way for people to see differently.
Right. And you talk about that, the three steps of freeing the elephant, about being curious with yourself, being curious about others, and be curious with others. Could you explain those?
Yeah. The first thing I would say is, one, there's no one size fits all approach to conversations or relationships. So this is a tool that we can use. There was a pattern that I was noticing. So I'll back up just to explain what drove these, is that really consistent pattern when people were in conflict and I was helping them navigate it was, one, it was really difficult or infrequent that people would consider the role that they played. Two, if I get angry or frustrated, being stuck in that emotion or staying in that emotion and not understanding, well, why, what is it about the situation of why I'm frustrated? Mm-hmm. And then really difficult for people to consider the other person's point of view. And then treating the conversation like a confrontation, right? I mean, that's part of why we avoid is we're like, I don't know how bad this conversation's going to get, but we're thinking of it. So the practice, we call it the curiosity first approach, which is first doing some reflection on getting curious with yourself, which could be asking questions just like, how do I feel? What was it about the situation that was so frustrating to me? Or, you know, what needs do I have that aren't being met? Or what values of mine are being stepped on? Because so often in relationships, when there's issues, it usually comes down to one of those two things, that we have a need that's not being met, and we have a value that's being stepped on or not honored. And then making sure we do ask the question, what role did I play, or am I playing? You know, maybe it's not something you did, maybe it's something you didn't do that potentially can contribute to it. When we talk about leaders, for example, and people in management, this applies to all people, but in particular, a question that I love to have people reflect on is it a preference issue or is it a performance issue? Because so often we confuse the two. And sometimes that's all you need to free an elephant. You know, I mean, that's the thing, is you might not have to have a conversation with somebody. You might just realize, oh, I'm frustrated with that. That's actually about me. That's not about them. That's something that I need to deal with or process with, or you get clarity and, you know, and the elephant could be freed. And then the act of getting curious about someone and similarly kind of asking questions, what makes sense to them, you know, from not to, and to clarify, the goal is not to make up a story or make assumptions or fill in their stories. It's just to remind ourselves that they have a perspective on the situation, mm-hmm. because that can be really hard, especially when we're in the heat of the moment. Again, depending on the situation, this is something I always say, like, I never want curiosity to be weaponized. And what I mean by that is sometimes, you know, people can learn a tool and they're like, I don't know, here's the scenario that actually happened. Somebody was experiencing fairly obvious harassment. And the person was like, well, you just need to get curious about it. I was like, nope, that's not when we get curious like that. Like they are being harmed like this. We don't need them to get curious about the person who's harming them in this moment. We need to protect them. And getting curious about others doesn't mean we diminish our needs. It doesn't mean that we set aside our needs, just we open the door to try to understand their perspective and their needs. Mm-hmm. And then trying to approach the getting curious with someone is, how do we approach the conversation? Again, more from a conversation of exploration instead of this like heavy confrontation.
So let's give an example, maybe something from your work, you know, where you can either delineate between these, or I mean, there has to be obviously reflection as part of this. You can't be curious if you don't have the ability to reflect, which, you know, and give yourself the time to reflect.
Yeah.
So I think those go one hand in hand, but give us some examples.
Yeah. So here's a really good example of somebody, and I write about this because it was such a funny moment, but I was delivering a workshop actually on this topic, and my client was, unbeknownst to me, very frustrated that her boss wasn't at this training. And she was talking to everyone like, where is so-and-so at? And why isn't she here? And can you believe she's not here? And in her frustration, was talking to everyone else but her. And when we got to the section about, we'll get curious about the other person, it caused her to pause. And she realized, she's like, I know my boss well enough to know. Once I realized that, she wasn't here because there was probably something more important she was having to manage, because that wasn't typical or normal for her. And so she came up to me at break and she's like, I've been throwing around these damn peanuts like everywhere, Sarah, because instead of considering, you know, the other person's perspective and thinking about them, she was just so mad and frustrated. But she said, as soon as I realized, oh, she would be here unless there was something more important. And she's the head of HR, so there's always fires. But sure enough, there was a really urgent situation that came up. And she's like, I realized I just needed to text her. And be like, hey, just wanted to check in and see where you're going. She was making lots of assumptions, having conversations with everyone but the boss, her manager. And so that's what it, you know, looked like in that situation, to kind of get to that point and realize, oh, the elephant got freed, because once I had that conversation with myself, I realized, oh, I just needed to like have a quick check-in with her to make sure everything was okay.
I think people avoid the conflict because it feels too, you know, their stomach might, it's a typical fear, you know, fear response, right?
Yeah.
Their stomach might get gurgly, or their head might hurt, or, you know, whatever physical response, literally people have a physical response if they have to confront somebody.
Yeah.
Okay. In the case you gave, it was like, that wasn't very confrontational. It was merely like, hey, just asking. So it wasn't necessarily going to be confrontational. But I think that a lot of people will avoid because it feels confrontational and they don't want to have that either in their bodies, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
So So what do you say to that situation where it is, conflict is going to determine that's going to feel that?
I love that you brought that up, because one of the most common requests that I'll hear from people is they'll say, I want to be more confident in having conversations that are difficult mm-hmm. or conflict mm-hmm. or, and then I'll ask them, I said, well, what does being confident mean to you? Like, what does that look like for you? And most of them will say that I don't feel that way. And which I appreciate. My perspective and the experience of working with so many people is that's a biological reaction when we feel threatened. That's a biological reaction when we feel like we're taking a risk or we feel vulnerable. And so for us in this work, the goal isn't to become so skilled that you never have those reactions. It's that we're able to recognize that that's a normal part of taking a risk and being vulnerable. And instead of being paralyzed by it, we can be present with it. You know, mm-hmm. I think if the relationship matters, if the relationship is important or the situation is important to you, it will likely be difficult on some level because it's hard and there could be consequences. I'm not naive or Pollyanna. I've seen lots of times where the other person wasn't ready to receive it or the situation didn't get resolved, maybe how the person wanted. But I've also seen a lot of times we can imagine it being worse than it actually is. And so part of the work of being able to navigate difficult conversations is to normalize that gross mm-hmm. feeling. Mm-hmm. And I still get that. I mean, there are times where I know I have to have a tough conversation with somebody who I really care for. I really love and appreciate and value the relationship and I don't want to ruin it. But I also know that if we don't have this conversation right now, there's damage that's already been done that we need to repair. And if that doesn't happen, we'll just mm-hmm. continue to erode. And you know, and I have to work through that and process that myself. And some, you know, sometimes my husband will be a smart aleck and be like, it's too bad you don't know somebody wrote a book on this. I was like, but this is why it may never become easy, but the hope is it can become easier.
Right. Well, and then you have the situation that kind of, not necessarily the opposite, but another aspect of this, which is that people who are confrontational by their nature, they will not let something get by. So they are not going to avoid conflict.
Yeah.
They're not going to avoid having a hard conversation and bringing something up. And in fact, in some cases with people like that, if they don't bring it up, it will feel really bad. So this mm-hmm. is almost like it's going to feel really bad for some people that if they do bring it up, it's going to feel really bad for some people if they don't bring it up, right?
Mm-hmm. So I love that.
How do we help? So what are some tips or ideas around the people that are not avoiding? Mm. So they're in a fight response form, right? Mm-hmm. And what do you say to someone like that?
Yeah, I think about that group sort of in two categories, because I think there are the people who need to have the conversation and who want to have a conversation. And then I think there's the party. I mean, I've seen it and experienced it where it's, I'm going to say it like it is, but isn't necessarily open to receiving it like it is. And the other thing to say to that is, particularly if you are someone like that, because I mean, I will say that, you know, I lovingly call this book my love letter to voiders, right? So it was very much with them in mind to help them step into how do we have the conversations. But something that is difficult for people who are comfortable speaking more directly is if you are working in a culture, if you are living in a culture that is avoidant,
yeah.
When you are the person to speak up and to speak the truth, it's really easy for you to almost become the target and the villain because you've disrupted the harmony.
I have someone right now who's in a very nice culture and she is like, they're turning to her to be the one who says the truth. It's like, dude, that's not fair to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
She also can't stop not do that either.
Yeah.
So she's kind of caught. So in that case, I'm advising or we're coming together on her narrating that. Mm. Hey, and she's in a meeting and she's actually saying, okay, guys, I'm going to do what I normally do. It'd be great if somebody else would bring this up, you know? So I'm bringing it up because it's important. Well, you know, and that's a little snarky, but just in some way narrating that's what she's doing, what she usually does, because she's calling the question.
Yeah.
And others need to be calling the question.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like when somebody speaks up and they come up. I mean, this happens all the time. Somebody speaks up and then, and then five people afterwards in the shadows go, oh my God, thank you so much for bringing it up. And sometimes when you're that person, because I often feel like, even though I'm not comfortable in that role, I've become more comfortable in that role, right? Or become, you know, it's just like, I can't not respond to it because we have to talk about it is it's always, so what held you back from speaking up? You know what, you know, it's because I can't go out on the limb always, you know, and I'm not going to speak on someone else's behalf, but I appreciate and love that practice of her narrating, like, hey, I'm going to do what I do. And, right. You know, and the other thing that I might say, if she wanted to, in that situation, to create an invitation, is sometimes it can be powerful to, I'm going to make an observation. What do you all notice? Like, I'm just noticing this. What does everybody else think? Or what right. do you notice to like engage?
I love that. I mm-hmm. love that. Like, yeah. make, not tell everything that's in her head, just say one little thing and then say, all right, what else do you guys notice? And to throw it out to the group. Yeah. I like that a lot. Yeah.
The other thing that I find is that, again, in some situations, if we can almost establish some commitments to each other, we call them collaborative commitments of what do we, you know, one of my favorite questions to ask when I'm building a new relationship is what do we want to do when we don't show up at our best? Because it's not if, it's when. And it's a time where we, most people would say, like, just tell it to me straight, just give me the feedback, just whatever. And, you know, and then when the time comes, the response is different. But by having some of those agreements, we can come back to that as in an individual relationship or in a team and go, let's say you and I agree to that. And you give me feedback and I don't respond to it well, or I'm avoiding or whatever the case might be. You can come back to that and go, hey, Sarah, we agreed to this. Did that change for you? That hasn't changed for me.
Right.
In a way for us to start to normalize it, because especially in certain parts of our country, especially when you look at like from a white dominant perspective, right? We avoid conflict, we remove emotions, all of this. And like psychological safety, I think this is one of the things when we talk about psych safety, because it's a phrase that is now used, is like, that doesn't mean comfortable.
Thrown around everywhere now.
Yeah, but that means that we can disagree openly and effectively, and we can be better for it. And we can fail and we can all of this stuff. And it's real challenging, I know, when somebody is fairly when they are comfortable being able to speak it, but it's the desire for harmony is so great. And I wish I could remember who I could give credit to this, but somebody said something really profound for me anyway, when talking about harmony. And they go, you know, people think of harmony as, you know, settled and keeping the peace. But when you think about harmony in music, harmony in music is because there's different voices coming in, and that's what makes it really beautiful. So how do we think of harmony, not as one note, but how do we think of harmony as bringing in different voices? And that always resonated for me. Yeah. I wish I could remember who to give credit to, but
So I want to take a moment to throw this out to the group.
Susan
Wang.
I'm volunteering. Right. I love this topic. Hi.
All right.
Working with it all the time and wondering what input you have for clients who are afraid of doing emotional damage that they can't recover from, that the relationship can't recover from, and how you'd advise moving into the conflict there.
Yeah. That I think is such a common one. If people go, I don't want to be mean and I don't want to do damage. So part of a couple of things. One is we always have the option for a do-over, a thoughtful do-over, right? If something doesn't go well, or maybe we didn't speak how we want it to, there's some power in being able to come back and go, I've been thinking on that conversation and how it went. And I don't know about you, but I didn't like how it felt. And would you be open to doing a do-over? Because I value this relationship and I want to make sure that, you know, we get this right. I think sometimes we're afraid when we've like messed up or had a regrettable event to not come back and repair it, but there's always time to repair it. So that's one thing that was coming up for me, that's been a really powerful practice for myself and clients to realize that. And the other thing is sometimes I think when we're coming into these conversations, we're so caught up, you know, as Sue said, like in our emotions, that we aren't thinking about or taking the time to be really intentional about how do we want to show up? What's the impact we hope to make? And a big question that I always like to ask myself and other people is, who do I need to be and what do I need to do to try to increase that likelihood? I can't control the other person, but I can control me. And, you know, I mean, we just had to have a really, really tough conversation with a family member about some decisions that were made that substantially affected health and really damaged the trust and relationship. And part of the prep for it was like, we do not want to damage this relationship, but the reality is if we don't have this conversation, this damage will go unhealed. And so being really intentional about how do I want to show up? What do I hope to the impact to be? Who do I need to be? What do I need to do? And and to speak that, you know, if that's your goal, like I'm having this conversation with you because I care about you. I'm having this because I think it's, you deserve to hear this. If I was in your position, I would want to know this or things like that. Because sometimes I think, and I assume you all see this, is people confuse directness with not being kind, right? They think that, well, I want to be kind. And it's like, right. But you can be kind and direct. You can say, I'm telling you this because I care about you. And I'm sharing this feedback with you because I want to see you grow. And I'm confident you'll figure this out. And sometimes we forget to bring in the love when it's tough.
Well, yeah, I mean, I like that a lot.
Yeah.
You have a follow-up?
Well, I love that. I love the intentionality. And then the only other thing I would say that I've tried myself in my own going into discomfort and also in coaching clients is just to name the discomfort. It's to say, you know, just simply, hey, this is feeling uncomfortable for me. I feel uncomfortable right now, but I feel like this is an important conversation, or I'm feeling a little edgy about this, or whatever their authentic language is. And I think that's helpful too, to just be human about it.
Yeah. Instead of having to pretend like you have to have it all together and even just say like, I might not get it right, but it's really important that we try. The other thing that I will say is when the conversation actually goes well, the thing that I wish more people practice, and it's something I've been trying to really practice, is naming my appreciation that we could have these conversations to reinforce that this is the dynamic of the relationship. Because I mean, we've all had times where you build it up and you're like, oh shit, that's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. And making a point to come back and go, you know, Susan, I'm so grateful that we can have these kind of conversations even when they're hard. And I just appreciate, because then we reinforce that that's the norm for us. So when it comes up, we go, yeah, that heat is high, but I know I'm not going to get burnt because I'm with Susan and this is what we do together.
Thank you for your question. I just wanted to add one thing. I talk with clients a lot about this idea of being direct and directness, and it seems too harsh, you know, and so I actually reframe it for them and for me, because it's not just them. It's to being clear.
Yeah.
So if clarity is more of the mindset, then it doesn't feel as harsh.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like a punch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your question.
Yeah. Thanks, Susan. And for the suggestion at the end.
Some M&Ms. Okay. Maynard.
Fascinating conversation. I mean, there's so much wisdom, you know, I just have so many thoughts. One thing is about love. I mean, I myself, where I'm in my life, it's all about love. And I speak about love as, I'm kind of fortunate, I guess, because I'm just naturally a loving person. It's surprising. I'm not working that much like I used to before, but I have a couple of CEOs, you know, that I'm working with, and we talk about love. We tell each other we love. I think there's so much about being more in that place. You know, it's, to me, it's more spiritual than all the stuff that we're doing. And there's so much antagonism in the world.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can change everything, but in my own small circle, it's really about radiating love and being in that place. And if you have a difficult situation with somebody, by the way, a lot of it is I have a million quotes, but one of them is the most important conversation that we have is the kind and compassionate conversation we have with ourselves.
Loving kindness.
Love, yeah, whatever you want to call it, you know, self-love or whatever. And then I think we're less likely, you know, I mean, anything's possible. And what underlies that, when I talk to people, I have like a love tour, you know, it's not like the Rolling Stones. It's just my natural, like you guys, I'm just bringing it up, you know, it's our game.
Yeah.
And underneath, I reflect a lot, like given my age, I'm living now with incurable cancer. And, you know, so I'm aware of making choices, you know, and all you know, where is important to engage or not engage and all these things. But one thing I think is really true, so I reflect on what's really true, and not that I know for sure, but is so many people have lack of self-worth. And when you don't feel good about yourself, you know, and we're all working on ourselves, to say the least, otherwise we wouldn't be in this business, but we project all this stuff onto everybody else. We all do it, right? So I don't know, you know, to kind of sum it all up, you know, it's I guess it's showing up to be in a loving space, and not all of a sudden then. I mean, to me, I don't show up all of a sudden like that. You know, it's just life I try to live. You know, if you try to show up just in the conflict, you know, good luck. And then come from love with the people we have difficulty with. And I've had hard conversations with people. I have no problem avoiding or whatever. But it comes from love. It doesn't come from antagonism or making someone wrong. The language that we're using now, and if I get a referral or I'm on some call and we're calling people difficult, or the latest one, it seems like everybody's toxic, you know, and I still haven't worked that one out, but I don't like it, but I don't know, can't quite figure it out. And everybody is
we're not a chemical.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, I don't know, to me, it's just really unkind. I get there's difficult, we're whatever, all that stuff, challenging. It's our language that, that we use, I think, sure. You know, is so important in this. Anyway, I'll stop there. But,
thanks, Maynard.
No, Maynard, first of all, I love that as you're talking about love, you have that beautiful painting behind you for people who might be listening to this. That's just love all over. I really appreciate you bringing that up because this is a topic we talk about is love in the workplace. And, you know, from the standpoint of we're with humans, we're, you know, we're with fellow humans and we step into this mindset of it being so transactional. And, you know, and we think about that even from a standpoint of moving to remote and hybrid is so many of the conversations have leaned too heavily into just transactional and we've missed these moments of transformation. And, you know, we've explored this as a team even of, you know, why is that such a scary word to use in the workplace? I love my colleagues and I have clients who I definitely love and, you know, it comes back to, and I've had people say, but what if I have to fire them someday? I was like, oh, that's a lot of energy to hold on to. And it creates a distance and a space between you and the person right out of the gate that might not even be necessary. And you can have a situation like that come up and still doing it in a loving and kind way.
Exactly. So, you can fire someone with love. You can do it with love, right? You know? I was doing a workshop up in the wine country a while back and I started talking about love and someone said the L word. And I thought, you gotta be kidding me. You know, it's like somehow it's like the F word or whatever, you know, I'm comfortable with it. And I'm hoping if the more we talk about it and these kind of conversations, more people will become comfortable with it.
Yeah.
And that's the future of everything. I think as a species, we just need to be more kind and loving with each other.
Yeah, totally agree. And I think that sometimes we forget that. Even when we look at organizations, all they are clusters of relationships.
Yeah, right?
Of humans, yeah. The connections. And so when we can remind ourselves of that, it can just make things easier, lighter, you know, not as transactional, you know, there. And to your point about self-worth, something that was coming up for me when you were sharing that is, you know, there's we talk about avoidance from the fearful place, but, and this is still coming from a fearful place, but sometimes we might avoid because we're protecting our power. Mm-hmm. And I've certainly seen this where people will avoid, you know, maybe leaders who are in a situation where they can influence something they aren't. And it became very clear, oh, they didn't engage with that because they were protecting the power they had until that was challenged. And, you know, and some of that comes from that potentially from that sense of knowing yourself, trusting yourself, having that deeper sense of self-worth and not needing all that power that you had. But that's something that I think we don't talk about a lot is, especially when you have access to power and authority, sometimes you avoid things because you're staying connected to that and protecting what you have.
Sometimes people downplay it too. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, Maynard, thank you so much. Appreciate your comments and good luck with everything.
Yeah.
Okay. Deborah, go for it.
Thanks, Sue. I've been enjoying this immensely. And one of the things I've really latched onto is this wonderful use of the term harmony in its musical sense. And I'm wondering, do you have other metaphors that you find useful in, besides the elephant one, but other metaphors that you find useful in helping people get to the point of, oh, this is going to be so much better when I do this, even though it looks so difficult before I've done it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple, you know, some of it's metaphor, some of it's just like perspective. One is, it's funny that I'm using another musical metaphor, but, you know, is how do we increase our range as humans? And so when you think of somebody who's a great singers don't just sing a couple of notes really, really well. They're able to sing a lot of notes depending on what the situation and what the song is. And so, you know, because some people will be, well, I'm just not that direct person. I'm not like, I can't do that or whatever. Or the flip side is like, I don't know how to be, I just want to say how it is. I don't want to be curious and ask a question, Sarah, or whatever the case might be. And so sometimes I'll offer that up is we just want to increase the range. So you have more notes that you can play depending on the situation. This is a phrase that has been very resonant for clients recently is how do we right size the problem? Because sometimes things will feel so big. So how do we, whether that's gathering information, having the conversation, like how do we right size it, has been really powerful for people when they're feeling overwhelmed. And so those are a few that definitely come up. I'm sure, I know I'm a little bit of a metaphor person, but those are increasing notes is probably one of the most powerful for people who go, but I'm not a people person. You know, like I'm not an emotional person. I was like, what emotions don't you feel? Like, I mean, I'm always kind of a smart aleck when that comes up, but like, but it's about like, how do we increase our notes that we can play depending on the situation?
We say the same thing in sports. Increase your range. Yeah. It's the same.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank
you. Thanks, Deborah. Thanks, Mater. So I've got one more question and then we're going to move from there.
Okay.
So I just want to talk about hybrid because I think that there's a more pronounced issue with this. It's easier in some respects to avoid conflict on Zoom and just let things just dissipate or, you know, let them go. And sometimes that's okay. Sometimes most of the time it's probably not. So are there any tips you have or ideas around, particularly with hybrid and particularly really with remote, where we're not going to be going to the office. Mm-mm. And so how do we get people offline, for example? I like to linger with people. That's one way to do it. What were some other things?
Yeah, I mean, we have to be, I mean, this is playing the long game, right? But we have to be even more intentional about building really deep levels of trust intentionally so that we have that foundation. And again, you know, like I was mentioning earlier, is that what we're seeing in the clients who move from in-person to hybrid, they're really struggling with filling the gap of how to build the relationships, and the conversations are so transactional. And, you know, and somebody said, it's just harder now. And I'm like, I hear that because it's different, but I would argue you might not have been great at it before. You just had more opportunities for
it. Right.
And so so the perspective shift is working in a virtual setting almost requires us to be more intentional about right? Building a relationship in a different way. But so many of the principles are the same. It's just what makes them, I think, feel scarier is that if we don't have that existing relationship to build from, then it can feel more threatening. I will say this though, there are some, you know, benefits for some people in working, you know, in a remote or a hybrid situation where they're at home, where they don't have to deal with some of the BS that they had to deal with in the office. Like I can just focus. I can just get my work done. Right. I don't have to deal with, right? Like microaggressions or passive aggressive behavior and things like that. So I think the thing that we're seeing is the intentionality has to be so much higher than it ever was before. And that's been a really difficult transition for people, especially people, quite frankly, who never really led in a relational way to begin with.
Right. Yeah. I feel like I'm a broken record with the intentionality. Like I think I use the word intention, like every client's like five times a session. It's like, you have to be more intentional about that. You have to be more intentional about that. You have to put time on it. You know, whatever.
And also to that point, and we need to challenge the rules we've created about what it looks like and how we can do it. You know, I was thinking about, I was working with a gentleman and he, you know, was lamenting the fact that he goes, I just, you know, in this new virtual, you know, environment, it makes me sad that I'm not going to have a relationship with the new hires. And I said, is that a rule or is that a possibility? And he was kind of paused. And I said, if you had to build a relationship, how would you do it differently? And, you know, because we can get so caught in our patterns that we forget to open up and go, so how, like, you know, how could you, how might we, you know, I think that if I were to add another word onto intentionality, it's what experiments can we run? Like, what can we try? Like, let's just experiment here because we can build deep. I have incredible relationships with people I've never met.
I know. It's amazing. Some of our clients, you've never met them before.
Yeah.
It's weird, but good. So thank you. This has been great. I love the conversation. I know there's so much literality. That's my new word too. It's like, you're very literal and so am I. So it's really easy to follow you and stuff. And most people are not. So it's like, I think sometimes people get tired of that and they get like a little tired. Okay, here she's coming. She's gonna be really literal about everything I'm saying. So that's the flip side of intentionality. It's like,
literal, it's that. Right. Yeah. I know you've thought through this and I'm not sure if I'm ready to receive it.
So again, this is Sarah Noel Wilson. It's Sarah with an H, Noel, N-O-L-L, Wilson.com. Sarah Noel Wilson on Twitter and Instagram. And don't feed the elephants, overcome the art of avoidance to build powerful partnerships. Really appreciate you being here. And I, you know, I've got a lot of things I want to think about and reflect upon. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
And wish everybody a wonderful aloha. Bye now.